The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Wednesday. I said it is, and it sounded like one word. It is Wednesday, March 18th, 2015. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 137, a production of GalacticNetcasts.com. I'm Dave Nelson, and joining me, as always, Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. How you guys doing?
Itchy.
Please explain.
Cranky. Well, I have been incredibly itchy for like the past month practically, and I've broken out. I have bumps, hives, whatever you want to call it. And I went to the doctor and they were like, hey, we don't know what's causing it. It could be anything. Here's some medicine to take. You'll find out if it works in about a month.
Oh, okay.
So,
see, I think I know what it is. You're exposed to a new environment. This is your first spring in Wisconsin, so there's new things that your body's not used to. So maybe
it would make sense if the itching had started after it was negative 16 degrees, but it was still sub-zero okay. when it all started.
Well, maybe you're allergic to Brad.
That's what I said. She's allergic to me.
I should have developed symptoms earlier, like a couple of years ago.
Could be.
Maybe it's prolonged exposure to Brad.
See, I should come with a warning label is what it is. Prolonged exposure to Brad Ludwig could cause itching, rash.
So, yeah, I've...
Bleeding from the eyes.
I just want to go soak in a tub of oatmeal and then put stuff on me that would make me less itchy and just go to bed.
Well, I'm sorry that you're feeling that way, Anessa, but... I think you just gave us a title already,
Feeling that way? That's a great song.
No, a tub of oatmeal.
A tub of oatmeal. Well, it's like the colloidal oatmeal soak from Aveeno, but it's easier to call it a tub of oatmeal.
See, in my head, I was thinking an actual tub of oatmeal, and that's...
the title of it could be A Tub of Oatmeal, You're Soaking in It.
So, there you go.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the podcast where we talk about soaking in oatmeal and aliens. They're both in there. And we talk about aliens wherever they are, in film and TV, video games, comic books, science, real life, fact or fiction, wherever the aliens may be, we talk about them. We track them down and we corner them and ask them, what the hell are you trying to do? Okay, the show is divided into three sections. The news, the craft corner, that's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft, and our picks for the week. If you want to watch us do the show live, we usually record Wednesday evenings around 9:30 Eastern, 8:30 Central. Our order is a little bit screwed up tonight because of our guest on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, but you can go back and watch us at youtube.com/GalacticNetcasts or at... What?
What a great guest, too.
Oh, yes. If you're not subscribed yet to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, please do so because the next episode is going to be awesome. We talked to Mark Stay, the writer of a brand new film starring Gillian Anderson and...
Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yeah. Called Robot Overlords, and he was awesome, so you should all check it out. And you can find it at GalacticNetcasts.com. But first, on with this podcast, and we start it with the news.
In the news.
Anessa, you are first.
Yay! I've lost my spot. Hang on. I was further in the dock. Well, Friday is March 20th, and March 20th, for those that are unaware, I know I was unaware, It is Extraterrestrial Abductions Day.
Really? I didn't know that either. I'm not doing my job.
I came across it while searching for a story, and surprise, it's March 20th. So, yay for being abducted by aliens.
And the probing and stuff. Sorry about that.
It's
such a random holiday. And it's movieplots.com is where I discovered this. And a gentleman named Stephen Adamson made a list of the 5 most legitimately freaky abduction stories. And I'm just going to talk about a couple of them. As you would expect, the Hills are on there. We've talked about, Betty and Barney?
Betty and Barney.
On multiple occasions on the show, so I'm not going to talk about them tonight.
Wait a second. When you said the Hills, I was thinking the Hills have eyes for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, I had that thought after I said that. I'm like, wait a second. Betty
or
and Barney.
Sound of Music. Huh? The Hills are alive. They're with alive. The Sound of Music?
They're alive with the Sound of Music.
Sound of Music. There we go. There's a horror movie mashup we need to make. Sound of Music and The Hills Have Eyes.
Yes, perfect.
It's something. I don't know about perfect, but it's something. The ones that I kind of dug that we haven't really covered much was the Pascagoula abduction back in 1973. This is a story about 2 co-workers, Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker, who claimed they were abducted by an unidentified craft while fishing. The 2 were fishing off of a pier near Pascagoula, Mississippi in October during the evening, and they reported that they heard a whirring sound and saw 2 blue flashing lights. A small oval-ish craft appeared in front of them, and reportedly 3 pale creatures emerged, all about 5 feet tall. Hickson and Parker said the creatures had carrot-like growths emerging from their nose
carrots.
And ears, and they had claws in place of hands. Hickson said that he was looked at by a mechanical eye while aboard the craft, and Parker initially mentioned that he didn't remember what happened during the event. In an interview 20 years later, though, Parker gave a detailed account of his inspection. He said there was a telepathic communication with the beings. Of course, this seems a little fishy, no pun intended, by the author. Once Hickson and Parker reported the incident to police, they were questioned. The strangest part about the whole thing is when the police left the 2 of them alone in a room, they left a tape recorder behind and expected them to say it was a hoax to one another. Instead, Hickson and Parker could be heard nervously talking about the event. At one point, Parker said, "I knew all along they was people from other worlds up there. I knew all along. I never thought it would happen to me." Creepy.
Okay, I think that deserves something from the soundboard. Let's see, maybe...
I felt like I needed to say that with a southern drawl.
Oh, you beat me to it, Brad. I was going to do that, but then we could do this one, too.
but yeah, I felt like maybe I needed to say Parker's line with a southern accent or something.
You really do.
Oh, just because, you know, it's like, I knew all along there was people from other worlds up there. I knew all along. I never thought it would happen to me.
Good job.
You know, for being from the South, I really have a crappy southern accent.
You really do.
Well, I mean, Texas isn't really the South. I mean, it is, but it's not. I mean, there's so many different variations of the accent in Texas.
There is, and you don't really end up with a stereotypical hick accent until you get to East Texas.
Mm-hmm. That's the South right there.
Yeah, well, it starts going into, like, Arkansas and the Ozarks and whatnot.
Scary territory.
But anyway, next up we have Travis Walton in 1975. He was 22 years old at the time. It was November 6th, 1975. And Travis Walton and his crew of fellow loggers had finished working and were headed home when they saw a large silver disc floating above a clearing in the sky. The person who was driving the car stopped. Walton immediately leapt out of the car and ran towards the object. According to others in the car, the craft began to move and shot a blue-green beam that struck Walton. The team went to the police, and when they came back, Walton was gone. He reappeared 5 days later, apparently weighing much less and with stories from the possible abduction. In this case, of course, we only really have Walton's perspective when considering the validity of the story. However, his team did report that they saw it. It became a huge international news story. In 1978, Walton published a book about the experience called The Walton Experience. Surprise! They also based the story of the film Fire in the Sky off of his story. So if that sounds familiar to you, that's where they got it from, was The Walton Experience.
Not to be confused with the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Or The Waltons.
Yeah.
Or The Waltons.
Hey, it's another great mashup.
Yep. The Waltons and Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, man. It's the family's the band. You got Grandpa Walton on the keyboards. You got John Boy on lead singer. He's got to be a lead singer.
Good night,
singer.
John Boy.
Good night, Jimmy.
That could be one of their songs.
Yep.
Okay, go ahead, Anessa.
So, and then the last one that I picked out that I kind of dug was Frederick Valentich. Also from the 70s, so 1978. Frederick was a 20-year-old aspiring pilot training to fly over Bass Strait in Australia when he radioed the Melbourne Air Traffic Control to let him know he was being shadowed by a UFO that was about 1,000 feet above him. He claimed that the craft was orbiting around him and emitted a green light. He alerted ATC, Air Traffic Control, of the engine problems he was experiencing, and when asked to describe the object, he replied, "It's not an aircraft," before losing the transmission and giving off metallic scraping sounds. They lost contact with him at this point. 4 days later, after a 1,000-mile-long search had been completed, there was absolutely no trace of Valentich or his craft. Some people say Valentich became disoriented, started to fly upside down, and looked at his own lights in the water. Others say it was all staged and a hoax. Others think that it was an alien abduction.
Others think that it was an alien abduction.
Yep. So, yeah, no, I actually kind of dug that one. And you can go to the site, moviepilot.com, read this article, and you can actually vote on whether or not you think that these stories are true.
Oh.
So you can put your opinion out there, like, oh, that's total crap. Like, I don't believe that happened. You can voice your opinion by voting.
What a neat feature. I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that was kind of a cool idea to include it, because a lot of times, you know, people include a list and they include stories, but they don't really ask for a way to see if people actually believe whether or not these are true.
Hmm. Well, so. Besides Betty and Barney Hill, what are the other stories that you did not include from that article?
The only other one was Whitley Strieber from 1985. And he ended up becoming a New York Times bestseller based off of his story. Strieber, he's the author of horror novels and claims he was abducted by non-human visitors from his home in upstate New York in December 1985. I'm just going to tell the story.
Well, his book inspired the movie Communion, right?
I'm trying to think.
Pretty sure it did.
Strieber never specifically states that these visitors are aliens, but most people read his 1987 book Communion.
Okay, yeah.
With that assumption. So I believe his experience, he wrote about his experience in Communion, and this gave the validity to the topic of alien abduction and increased public interest in the subject. Strieber wrote several nonfiction follow-ups to the story and many novels about similar topics. And he currently hosts a paranormal-themed podcast called Dreamland. I'm not familiar with it, but if people are, feel free to let us know how it is. And the fact that he profited so much from this talk makes the author, Stephen, a little skeptical of whether or not it really happened.
Yeah, he's really made a career out of that one experience.
Yeah, so, that was the other one that I left off. But
okay. Neat.
Not
great.
Anymore. It's now included.
if you really want to dig into UFO encounters and alien encounters, go on to either MUFON, That's the Mutual UFO Network, or mm-hmm. the National UFO Reporting Center websites. And you can read just report after report after report after report. And some really, like, they do a good job of archiving the really heavy hitters. So if you want to read one similar to the ones that you mentioned, they're on there as well on those websites.
Right.
All right, cool stuff.
Yay, and happy extraterrestrial abduction day.
That's Friday. On Friday, okay.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is.
That's what she said.
It is.
It's been a while since we had one of them.
You're welcome.
Good job, Brad. All right, Brad, you're up. What's your story?
I found a great story on Wired.com. Actually, Dave found a great story from Wired.com. I can't take credit.
I wasn't going to say anything. You could have taken credit for it.
No, I'm not going to be that guy. If you want to find aliens, look for a colorful planet. Now, that really makes a lot of sense when you think about it. If you want to find a planet that has life on it, it's going to have a lot of different colors on it. Like if you look at planet Earth from space, it's blue, it's green, it's brown. There's a lot going on. There's life on the planet. If you're looking at a thing that's just brown or gray all over, there's probably not anything on it. And it's a so simple, it's brilliant moment that Lisa Kaltenegger came up with. And she came up with it when she was at the Grand Prismatic Spring in Yellowstone National Park. And its azure valentine-shaped pool is surrounded by lurid, fiery yellow-orange tendrils. And that really stunned her. As an astronomer who studies other worlds, Kaltenegger, I finally got it, understood better than most people here on Earth that the kinds of bacteria that thrive in hot springs like the one in Yellowstone tend to have striking coloration. I knew it before, logically, she said, but seeing it was different. When astronomers characterize stars, they often use a system called color diagram. Basically, it's a chart that maps the brightness of the star as seen in two different wavelengths through a telescope. Measured this way, stars tend to cluster into groups based on things like how old they are. Kaltenegger, director of the Institute for Pale Blue Dots at Cornell University, teamed up with her student at the time, an astronomer named Siddharth Hegge, who's now also at Cornell, to try the same thing with bacteria. Now, they took five species, each of them tough enough or weird enough to potentially exist on another planet, hypothetically, and looked at them with visible or near-infrared light. They then plotted a color diagram. It turned out that the measurements formed a diagonal line suggesting that other bacteria might fall on the same graph. Now, in a study published today, they expand those results to 137 microbial species, a catalog of colors that, if you see them glinting off a planet outside of our solar system, might suggest bacteria on the surface. So far, we haven't found anything that falls outside of the line, Kaltenegger says. And since actually looking directly at an exoplanet isn't easy right now, these kinds of signatures might be the first sign anyone sees of ET. Now, the next generation of planet-bound telescopes will actually be able to see the kinds of colors that Kaltenegger and Hedge's catalog covers. The Giant Magellan Telescope will start observing in 2021, the 30-meter telescope in Hawaii will also be finished in a few years. And if one of these telescopes finds a planet promising for life, then astronomers can zoom in with the James Webb Space Telescope, which is scheduled for launch in 2018. JWST will be able to detect gases in the atmosphere, including the byproducts of processes unique to living things, i.e., bacteria.
They are really stepping up, aren't they?
They are. I know that a friend of Anessa's she's done some astronomy work in Chile, and they're finishing up that ultra huge telescope that's going to be, they're like flattening up the of the peaks there.
Yeah, the one that's so high up in altitude that you have to have a breathing apparatus to actually walk around.
Yeah. You have to have a physical before you can go up there. They have to make sure that you are physically fit enough to survive the altitude. I, for one, would not manage because I've been up on, I think, Sandia Crest, which is close to 11,000 feet. Mm. And, like, running back and forth and gathering equipment just took a toll on me, and I was miserable. It was like a really bad hangover.
Oh, yeah, you had altitude sickness? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, getting back to the story, Esther... Whew, I screwed it up already. Esther Sanroma, built a computer model to calculate whether an Earth-like planet covered in the bugs would look purple to a telescope. Now, these bugs, microbes, or other organisms... it's slang for that.
Oh, you're not talking about the creatures from Starship Troopers that were also called bugs?
Not at all.
Okay.
Now, they're also measuring the colors of other anoxogenic phototropes, which span a spectrum of greens, yellows, and reds. Instead of a purple exoplanet, you have a rainbow sherbet exoplanet. So, whether or not astronomers can see such colors will depend on how much land or water covers the planet and how thick its clouds are. Now, they found that if purple microbes only lived in oceans, a telescope wouldn't be able to detect them. But the galaxy is filled with all kinds of planets with different landscapes and seascapes. I think there is a big diversity of worlds out there, Kaltenegger says, and each could be home to a rainbow of life forms. So this is a very trimmed down version of this article from Wired. We'll have the link in the show notes so you can actually read the entire article, but it's a very, very fascinating read.
I want to interject with the opinion that I would love to live on a world that was, what was it?
Filled with purple bugs?
No, the sherbet. You mentioned sherbet.
I love sherbet.
Yeah, that would be, you could just eat it. You could just eat the world. It's just all sherbet.
Be very cold, but very tasty.
That is like a eureka moment, though. Like this woman that realized this, that looked for color. That makes so much sense that it's funny that nobody ever really figured it out earlier.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing that with stars, and we've talked about that before. And the reflected light off of planets to see what types of chemical makeup is in the atmosphere, and that would help determine, you know, is there methane? Are there gases that are dependent on there being abundant life on the planet? And taking that a step further, I mean, if you have a new generation of telescopes that can see even further and get more detail, not just from the light reflected off them, but to actually see the planet and be able to get a look at the coloration of the planet. God, that's huge. That's so huge.
Just imagine one day when we have the ultimate telescope that maybe, just maybe, we'll be able to see like a planet and then see like structures and like civilizations. Sure. That would be awesome.
And that day could come. Maybe not in our lifetime, but just probably soon after it.
All right. Good stuff, Brad. Very technical, and I swear to God, I don't give you these articles with big words on purpose, big words and names. I don't do it on purpose.
I usually handle them a bit better, but I'm a little off my game. I've been sick for a couple of days, so.
Man, that's a rough house you got there. Between Anessa's itching and you're being sick, it's
been plaguehouse.
Yeah, started Saturday because Alex was sick Saturday and Sunday, and then Brad got sick on Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday, and
my son brought a plague into the home. So
it's always the kids.
The kids.
It really is. I mean, they love to spread their germs unknowingly.
So we have a comment in the on the Hangout from the Infomaniac. They say, in my opinion, the best alien invasion story is The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. I love the musical version by Jeff Wayne. What?
I've not seen the musical version.
Okay. Thank you for that, Infomaniac. That's something I have to look up now.
I smell a future pick coming our way, possibly. No, good stuff. Thank you, Infomaniac. It's good to get a little feedback in the chat room. It's cool stuff.
It is.
Okay, my story, Revolt Producers Launch Crowdfunding Campaign to Aid South African Township. Now, it's one of those titles that you're not really sure what it means until you read the story. Like, what the hell is Revolt, and who are the producers? So let me tell you all about it. When the filmmakers behind Revolt, it's an alien invasion movie starring Lee Pace. Lee Pace is awesome. You guys fans of Lee Pace?
Are we what?
Are you fans of Lee Pace?
Yes, I was, well, I never really knew who he was until I watched Pushing Daisies.
Hell yeah.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, I love this show. Well, I love this show. I wasn't like, I love Lee Pace. It's like, I love the show. Yeah. And then just seeing him on other things and how...
Guardians of the Galaxy and...
You guys have...
He's a very diverse actor.
Yeah.
I mean, he, you know, he plays this quirky pie maker dude who can bring dead people back to life. And then he's this elf on The Hobbit, and then he's like this big bad in Guardians of the Galaxy, and
you should see him.
He plays a little bit of everything. He's not really a typecast.
No. Watch the show Halt and Catch Fire. You will like it, and his character is awesome in it. I did not watch Pushing Daisies ever. I've never seen.
Oh, it's a wonderful show. The last episode or two were kind of because the series creators were made aware that they were not being renewed, and so they tried to like rush everything and wrap things up because there were a lot of loose ends. But in general, it's a really good show, and I highly recommend giving it a watch.
Okay. Well, I didn't know who he was.
I did enjoy Lee Pace in The Mindy Project. He was on there recently.
Okay.
On an episode. He was... he lost his virginity to Mindy Lahiri, and like she inspired him just with something that she said. She was ashamed of watching or of people knowing that she liked to watch Monty Python. And she's like, yeah, I would watch it more if there was a way to watch it online without people knowing knowing my IP address. And so he ended up coming up with this multi-million-dollar idea and started this web thing. And yeah, anyway,
that's funny. That sounds like a typical Mindy Project plot line.
It is. But I don't know. I really like the show. And
it's a very fun, quirky show.
Yeah. But anyway.
Okay, so it's an alien invasion. It's an alien invasion movie starring Lee Pace and Skyfall Bond girl Berenice Marlowe, I think. It's probably wrong.
I think it is Marlowe, maybe.
Well, they shot for a day in a township outside of Johannesburg, South Africa, and they were struck by the generosity of the residents and the staggering hardships of life, including AIDS, drugs, poverty, and lack of water. So the film's backers, Voltage Pictures, Automatic, and 42 Productions are giving back to the township by launch, and they actually achieved their goal, a $15,000 crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo. They decided to match dollar for dollar in hope of raising $30,000 for a soccer field, drug counseling, a car wash for jobs, and an irrigation system for a community garden, among other ventures. Within hours of launching the campaign, they achieved their goal. So they got the $15,000, and the production companies matched that. So $30,000... going to this town in South Africa to help improve life there. So it's one of the reasons that they did this was not only just to help the people of this town, but also to kind of serve as inspiration for the rest of Hollywood. Maybe because they go to these locations, and I'm sure they see a lot of really bad, rough stuff sometimes. And it's, you know, why not give back? You know, why not help the world? Because you're making, you know, more than enough money on these productions. So, you know, use a little bit of that to give back. And I applaud these guys for doing that. Lee Pace said of filming there, "We did a big driving stunt and the whole community came out and helped keeping the road clear of kids and dogs. They were curious about us as we were about them." So look for the movie. It's called Revolt And I don't know anything about this film. I, you know, probably should have done my research on the actual film itself, but I was really enthralled by this awesome thing that they did. So when this movie comes out, please watch it and support it, because they did a really awesome thing. All right, that's the news. We would love to hear your thoughts about the subjects that we've covered or are going to cover on the rest of the podcast. Leave us feedback. Just go to our website, galacticnetcasts.com, galacticnetcasts.com. We have this really cool new feature where you put your mouse on the very right hand of the front page. I think it's actually on all the pages. You can click on it and actually record a message from the website. And we've also got our phone number on there as well, which is 805-328-3966. Leave a message on the website, galacticnetcasts.com, and we will play your message on the show. So do that, galacticnetcasts.com. Okay, it's time for this.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black triangular three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
It had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
It is time for the Craft Corner feature, a.k.a. famous alien spacecraft in history, and it was Inessa's turn to pick the craft corner this week. And what did you pick?
A hat, because we all need a hat. Actually, it's the conical hat, or it's also referred to as the conical disc, which I looked because I thought it sounded familiar, and it is apparently different from the cone UFO. This UFO resembles a Chinese peasant's large straw hat. It has a flat bottom. The craft is generally reported as being about 200 feet in diameter and 10 to 12 feet high at the peak with no exterior lights. It's also been described as a sombrero, which seems kind of odd because I don't recall there really being a cone to the sombrero.
Well, I mean, the center part kind of looks like a cone on some sombreros, sort of.
Maybe they just need a new hat maker. So yeah, it was kind of interesting. There wasn't really a whole lot of information out there that I could find because I kept coming across the cone, like the straight cone. It looks like an ice cream cone UFO, and I was kind of bummed about that. But I did find on U4th that they do have a couple of reports that mention a couple of eyewitnesses in their descriptions of this conical hat UFO. The first report says that the person was woken up by the frenzied barking of their dog. A migrant family heard a noise like a big swarm of wasps. Going outside their caravan, they saw a 25 to 30 meter sombrero hat shape giving off a violet glow. Three, quote, men descended in a tiny craft similar in shape to the large one. These men seemed to be three times the size of a normal human being. They gave off a violet yellowish glow as they collected plants and sugarcane, which were sucked up into the large craft via a transparent tube. After 10 minutes, the men re-entered their ship, which took off. As it did, so did the hair on the family's heads and arms stood up. So
that was a weird thing to say.
Yeah, so as the ship took off, everyone's hair stood on end.
It's from the suction of the transparent tube, because it's like the bank tube. You put the money in.
Yep. it makes that thump noise as your canister goes up, up, and away, or down, however the bank has their tube routed.
It's a series of tubes.
Series of tubes. So I thought that one was kind of interesting. And then the next one. You have three fighter bombers took off from the deck of a carrier off the coast of Korea on an early morning flight to bomb a truck convoy on the Yalu River Valley. As the sun came up, they were flying northward over the valley at 10,000 feet. The lead pilot was startled to see two large shadows moving at high speed along the ground, coming from the northwest. He looked up and saw that two huge UFOs were causing the shadows. His radar showed that they were moving at a relative velocity of 1,000 to 1,200 miles per hour when they were suddenly stopped, assuming the velocity of the planes at a distance of a mile and a half. They seemed to begin a jittering or fibrillation motion. The pilot's reaction was to shoot. He readied his guns and gun cameras, but the radar went haywire. The screen bloomed, becoming very bright, and he realized the radar had been jammed. Asbury Jam. Sorry. Lone Star. He called the carrier, but each frequency that he tried was successfully jammed by a buzzing moment after he turned it on, or by a buzzing a moment after he turned it on. All the while, the objects were jittering about, maintaining the speed of the planes. The pilot used reference points on the windshield and the previously determined range to determine their size. They were between 600 and 700 feet in diameter. They were shaped like conical hats with oblong ports in the crown, through which copper-green lights shone. The objects had a shiny, silvery appearance with a reddish glow surrounding them. Above the ports was a shimmering red ring encircling the top portion. The bottom was black except near the periphery, which glowed red. The black part never jittered. The objects then began maneuvering around the flight squadron, circling above and below. At this time, all six men in the three planes experienced a feeling of warmth in the airplanes and a high-frequency vibration. After the flight, they found that all the gun camera film had been exposed or fogged, and the luminous paint used on the instrument dials had become extremely bright. The paint had been rejuvenated. I guess their paint... I guess their paint was kind of dull, and all they needed was this hat UFO to shake things up a bit.
Yeah. It's apparently, it's a species of designers.
Yes. They came to Earth to make everything
fabulous. Sorry.
So the conical hat. It's fashionable and can help brighten your paint.
I wonder if there is a UFO type called a comical hat.
It comes to Earth and tells jokes.
Yeah.
Like, why don't roosters wear underwear?
Why don't roosters wear underwear?
Because they're peckers on their heads.
Is there a... Do you have a rim shot there, Brad?
That'll work.
There we go.
There you go.
Very nice. All right, cool. All right, now we know more about another shape of UFOs.
And you know the one joke that I know.
I
don't know a lot of jokes.
I know one joke. I know there's one joke, and it's somebody told me it over and over again in earlier life, and it's gross and you wouldn't want to hear it, and I'm not going to tell it.
Yeah, you know, this the joke that I just told, I would wake up to the oldie station when I lived in San Antonio, and they would have kids call in and tell their jokes, and that was one that one of the kids said, and that just for some reason it stuck with me. So anyway,
all right, well, there's the craft corner. Thank you very much, Anessa. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to picks. These are things that we have watched, listened to, played. What else? Read, I guess, is another one. And Brad,
attended experience.
Yeah, exactly. Anything that we have used our senses to enjoy, that would be a pick. And Brad is first in the lineup.
Well, found myself with a bit of time over the past couple of days while being ill, and I actually got a chance to watch something that was in my Netflix queue, and that is Planet Hulk. Now, this is from Marvel Comics. This was a direct-to-video project that Marvel did with Lionsgate Films. And Marvel has teamed up with Lionsgate to do a number of projects. This particular storyline comes from the Marvel Comics. The Illuminati, which is a collection of heroes in the Marvel Universe, the very, very intelligent ones, Reed Richards, Tony Stark, Professor X, Black Bolt of the Immortals, Namor, and Doctor Strange. And they had decided that the Hulk is just too dangerous to be on the Earth. So they construct a means and a scenario to get the Hulk off planet into low orbit to take care of a supposed satellite issue. And they find a way to trap him inside of a spacecraft and launch him from Earth. And they had picked out a planet that had plenty of vegetation and game for him to live off of. But the Hulk, being the Hulk, got very upset because this was a recording that was kind of played for him. And there ends up being damage on the ship, and it destroys or damages the navigation system. And the ship veers off of course and goes towards a wormhole and ends up crashing on a planet that is not unlike Rome in the structure of, there's plenty of things going on the planet, and to distract the people, they have gladiatorial games. So the Hulk is captured, and he's in a weakened state. I don't think that they really portray that decently in the film, but in the comics, the wormhole actually weakens the Hulk. He's a being basically of radiation, and the wormhole sort of affects that and weakens him slightly. So he is captured, put into slavery, and sent off to fight in these gladiatorial games. And the Hulk basically needs to... It's sort of a growing adventure that teaches the Hulk. Now, this is not the entirely mindless Hulk. This is the semi-intelligent... There's so many versions of the Hulk. In this particular case, he is semi-intelligent and not just a dumb rage beast. And he feels very betrayed by the heroes that he thought were at least friendly and slightly tolerant of him. And now he needs to deal with that and find a new way of life on this planet. And it's an hour and a half long, and it's I didn't read the original comics. I read some of the write-ups up to it, and I wasn't really a big Marvel person at this point in time. This would have been 2006 in the comics. I had kind of ditched Marvel and focused more on DC at that point in time. Pretty good story. Very enjoyable. If you know a little bit about the Hulk, know a little bit about the Marvel Universe, it's a good tale. And if you don't, if you just know that the Hulk exists, it's not really reliant or heavy on Marvel back history because it happens entirely on an alien planet. So a very good tale. Well worth a watch.
It's a self-contained story, basically.
It's a very self-contained story.
Now, does Bruce show up at all? Or is it just the Hulk?
No, it is strictly the Hulk. It is entirely a Hulk story.
Is there a reason why? Do they explain why he doesn't go back to being Bruce?
No, they don't really explain. I think they explain it in the comics. I did a little bit of research on it, but it is not explained in the movie at all.
There's rumors going around that the Hulk may launch him into space, use part of that storyline in Age of Ultron at the end.
Unfortunately, in my research, I don't want to give anything away, but he does eventually come back to Earth and he's not happy. So, and rightfully so. So I'm not sure that maybe they take a piece. It doesn't seem to, well, you know, it's so hard to say. I mean, every time that I've made a guess on what they're going to do in the Marvel Universe, I've not hit the mark every time. What? So they could do something like that, but you know, that would really take him far afield, and that would really, well, that would mean that would put him more in the Guardians of the Galaxy territory, but...
Yeah, who knows?
Know.
They might, he may cross over and be on the next Guardians. Who knows?
Yeah, we just, it's hard to say.
All right. Good stuff. Well, we won't have very long to wait. It's only, May 1st? Is the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. That's right around the Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
at local comic book stores. You can. There's going to be an offering of free comic books that you would be able to pick up and check out. So,
okay, so I have two picks. One that I planned on. The other one, kind of impromptu. I was listening to an episode of the Nerdist podcast, and there's no aliens at all. I just wanted to throw this in since you were talking about comic books. And okay. Brian Michael Bendis was the guest. And it was fabulous. It was fantastic. A really good episode of The Nerdist. And I didn't know anything about Brian Michael Bendis. I knew that he was involved in comics somehow, but he has a big, significant involvement in comics, including the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. To me, Brian Michael Bendis, at his best, is his super-powered police procedural series called Powers.
Yeah, that just debuted, and that's one of the reasons why he was on the podcast to talk about that. Yeah.
His writing in that is top-notch. A lot of the stuff that I saw him do in, like, the whole Skrull War thing that they did, a lot of, I think, some of the stuff that he's been sucked into and other Marvel stuff has been absolute crap.
Okay, well,
so I have a love hate relationship with Brian Michael Bendis.
Well, either if you love him or hate him, you should check out a TED talk he did. He did a TED talk in his hometown of Toledo or Cleveland, one of the Ohio cities, and it's really good. It talks about his inspiration for becoming a comic book writer and how he got into it, and it was very inspirational. So that's my first pick. My second pick is a movie called Dreamcatcher, 2003 science fiction horror film. It's an adaptation of Stephen King's novel with the same name, directed by Lawrence Kasdan, and it stars Damian Lewis. Love that guy ever since I saw him first on Band of Brothers. Jason Lee, Donnie Wahlberg, Morgan Freeman, Tom Sizemore, quite the lineup of actors. And have you guys seen the Dreamcatcher movie?
Nope.
No, I have not.
I've seen the cover.
Yeah.
At the video store.
Okay. Well, if you get a chance, watch it. It just happened to be on the TV on Sunday. We watched it, and there's aliens. I'm like, oh, there's my pick. I don't have to go out of my way to find a pick this week. It's right there. So the basic story is the characters Jonesy, Pete, Beaver, and Henry are all childhood friends kept together by a special secret they share. Once every year, they go on a hunting trip to Jefferson Tract. This year is different. They shelter a man who has been lost for days in the woods in the middle of a continuing blizzard. The man has odd marks on his face. As they discover the awful truth of what he is infected with, the military attempts to quarantine an alien virus as the result of an alien crash landing. The four friends must survive the alien infection and overpower a crazed military admiral played by Morgan Freeman. It's the first time that I've seen Morgan Freeman actually play a bad guy in this film. The four friends must survive the alien infection. Oh, that's what I just said. And there's an interesting how they're connected is through this person, this kid that they saved when they were kids. They were just walking along out in the field or wherever, and they came upon this kid being bullied. They saved him, and it turns out that this kid had like powers that gave them powers. And one of the powers is they're all connected. So during this entire movie, they're able to communicate with each other, and one of the friends actually gets infected by this alien, and that's the Damian Lewis character. And it's neat because he's still himself, but there's also an alien inside him, and whenever he switches to the different, like, himself or the alien, he changes to this really Cockney British accent, which is kind of funny. and eventually they track down this kid who's now an adult, played by Donnie Wahlberg, and he helps them get rid of this alien presence in the other guy, and that basically defeats the aliens and invasion over with. It's a really good film, And it was really cool to see Morgan Freeman, like I said, play a bad guy. And it's cool to see this organization that their only job is to hunt down aliens and take care of, like, UFO crashes. And I really kind of wish that they would have done, like, another movie based on just that organization. Because it sounds very interesting. Like, it was just this elite military group. And they didn't call each other by, like, sir or captain. He called his soldiers Bub and, like, all these, like, cute names that they called each other. They wore uniforms, but they didn't, like, salute or do all these other stuff that military people do. And I really wish that they would have maybe focused on that side of the story a little bit more, because it was interesting that they're basically cleaners. Like, they go up to a UFO crash and they clean up the situation. And it would be cool to see a movie based on that, or a TV series based on that idea of a military outfit that goes out and cleans up after UFO crashes.
So, give it time. I'm sure Hollywood will swing back around and do something with that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I highly recommend Dreamcatcher. I don't know if it's available on Netflix or Amazon. Like I said, it was just on the TV. We watched it and it was good. So if you get a chance, check it out. That is my pick, Dreamcatcher. And Stephen King is awesome. Anything that he does is pretty cool. All right, Anessa, what's your pick?
My pick is actually an app that Brad and I have been playing for a while now. It's like the modern day Frogger. It's called Crossy Road, and you are a character, and your character has to cross over highways, cross train tracks, cross logs that are moving. Sometimes there are crocodiles that you have to jump on the back of. Note, don't jump on the head, they will eat you.
It's a fact.
It's just like a never-ending Frogger game. And you can unlock different characters. And one of the characters that you can unlock is Specimen 115. And he's adorable. He's a little green block with short legs and arms. And like two, I guess, buck teeth.
Yeah.
And he has a little antenna. He's an alien from outer space. And with each character that you can unlock, either the background changes or maybe there's additional characters make an appearance as you play. So, for example, the Gravedigger, you'll see a lot of tombstones, the occasional ghost. If you are, I'm trying to think of what else, a zombie, like everything's dimly lit. You have, of course, headstones again, and the characters will make sounds according to what they are. My favorite so far is Floppy Fish. Second would be Specimen 115. But the big thing with Specimen 115 is you'll see livestock, like cows, hanging out periodically. And if Specimen 115 gets closer to the livestock will then be abducted. It's pretty awesome.
So it looks like it's pulled up by beams.
By like
energy.
A beam, yeah, of energy.
And then you hear it go, moo, and then like disappear.
So, Dave's still there.
I'm here. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I wasn't sure because I don't see anybody. it's really a fun game. It's available for iOS, for Android. It's free. Unless you want to pay for the characters, then it's like a dollar a pop. But as you cross the various lanes and obstacles and whatnot, you can collect coins and then use those coins to spend on characters, and you end up getting characters pretty quickly. So it's a great game. If you don't have a lot of time to play, just a couple minutes to kill, it's a really great filler game. I highly recommend it.
All right.
Yeah, that's my pick, is Crossy Road.
Speaking of video games, did you guys hear that Nintendo is bringing their video games to mobile?
No,
I hadn't heard that.
They have some partnership with another company that's very successful at apps. And I guess they each got a share of one another's companies, and they're going to start offering the classic and probably even newer games on like your iOS and your Android and all these other platforms. So,
man, I really hope, fingers crossed, that they... they have Super Mario World. I really love that game. I spent countless hours playing through it, found every single secret thing ever that there was to find, completed all 96 levels, even which includes the hidden ones. That was my game, man. That was my
game. Was your jam?
That was my jam.
Steph loves Link. What's the game?
Zelda.
Yeah, she loves Zelda, so she's very happy that it's gonna happen. Cause she's been obsessed for a long time with Castleville. So it's gonna be good to see her move on from Castleville to another game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking Castlevania because that was a game as well.
Yeah, no, Castleville. Yeah.
But yeah, I would be excited if they brought some of those games. I mean, even if it's the older ones where you have like Duck Hunt.
That would be awesome.
Super Mario World. I mean, I honestly think that Duck Hunt would be pretty awesome on a mobile device.
I think so. Yeah.
I think that one would definitely work. But yeah, I don't know. I would love to see some of those actually make it to mobile.
Well, cross your fingers. Let's hope it happens. All right. Thank you guys for your reviews, your picks. Again, Crossy Road, you had your Dreamcatcher, and you had Planet Hulk. So check those out. We'll have the links in the show notes to get your hands and your eyes and your whatever on those. You can find The Alien Invasion by going to the brand new website, galacticnetcasts.com. Watch our episodes on our YouTube channel. And if you subscribe, which we hope that you do, you can do that on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher, and leave reviews there as well. That helps us get more listeners. And the best thing that you can do, really, though, is tell your friends. If you have friends that are into geeky, science-y, sci-fi stuff with aliens, tell them that you would think that you would like this podcast, The Alien Invasion. Leave us feedback on our website, again, galacticnetcasts.com. Click on that thing on the right-hand side and leave a message, or call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966. Oh, I forgot to mention this on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We have a thing now, a brand new thing on our website called the Galactic Collective, and you just click on that, and right there, on the Galactic Collective page, I have to say it very slow, you'll find all of our links to our social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, our Facebook group, and our Patreon account as well. So become part of the Galactic Collective today. All right. Final thoughts, everybody. Brad, you're first.
I can't wait for May 1st and the new Avengers film.
No, I think we're all in agreement on that. I think we all can't wait.
And then we'll find out if they are going to launch Hulk into space or not.
Real quick, speaking of Marvel, have you guys watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. yet from last night?
No. We're going to watch that next.
I'm like, because we're doing this podcast.
You're going to love it. You're going to really, really love it.
I'm so excited with what they're doing with the Inhumans and the power structure and stuff. I'm very excited.
Well,
and Blair Underwood's in this episode.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. Haven't seen him for a while.
That's Brad's man crush.
Yeah.
Anessa, what's your final thought?
I ended up seeing Kingsman last night, and it was wonderfully violent. Some have said maybe a little too violent, but I really loved it.
It's that Secret Service movie, right?
Yes, it is the Secret Service movie.
Colin Firth as the lead character.
And Samuel
and he's wonderful as the lead character, as the one of the spies. And just, I guess, to talk about the violence. There's a lot of violence. It's not like overly graphic or anything. You don't see people spilling their guts and whatnot, but without spoiling much, really. But if you don't want to know, you can turn it off now and call it a day. But there is a scene where heads explode, and there are so many heads that explode, it turns into a fireworks show. So there's various colors, and it's done to music, and it's
wow,
crazy.
Okay. Interesting. I don't know if I want to watch it now, but
you know, for the most part, if you take out the violence, it is actually a pretty good flick. I like the story. there's like one part where I'm watching it and I'm just like, if this happens, I'm just going to bust out into tears. And for people that have seen it, you could probably guess where. But for me, that, yeah, I totally would have cried.
All right. Thank you, guys. And that's going to do it for this edition of The Alien Invasion. And until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Ciao.
I'm sorry. Bye, Dad.
Wrong podcast.
Wrong show. Sorry.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.